Any doubts about the accuracy of the intelligence gathered at Kadesh Barnea 40 years earlier vanished once the children of Israel crossed the Jordan River and camped at Gilgal. Looming against the sky just 2 to 3 miles away was the imposing hill on which stood the city of Jericho. Like many cities of that period, it had not only a hilltop position, but also an impressive network of fortifications designed to dissuade any potential attacker. An embankment made of earth with a very steep slope surrounded the city. And at the bottom of the embankment was a retaining wall to keep the earth from washing away. And on top of the retaining wall, so we're now talking about still at the bottom of the hill, on top of the retaining wall was another wall about 25 feet high and 6 feet wide. So any attacker coming against the city would have been confronted with a wall with a total height of 30 to 40 feet. That obstacle was daunting enough. But even if an invader was able to breach that first wall and gain access to the earthen rampart or embankment within, that attacking force would still be outside the city. Because at the top of the embankment would be another wall rising an additional 25 feet or so, with its base roughly at the elevation of the top of the wall down below. So you get the picture? If you were standing outside the initial wall, the top of the interior wall would have been as much as 65 feet above you, about the height of a six-story building. Is it any wonder, then, that the spies at Kadesh Barnea brought back the report to Kadesh Barnea that the cities were walled up to heaven? Jericho was such an imposing fortress that the children of Israel could not fail to see it from their vantage point in their camp at Gilgal on the west bank of the Jordan River. They covered a long distance over many years wandering through the wilderness, but finally they crossed the Jordan, again by God's miraculous intervention. But the campaign of conquest was just beginning, and Jericho was the number one target. If the Israelites could not defeat Jericho, then they would be easy prey for the defenders of any Canaanite city. Now, before the crossing of the Jordan, as we read here, Joshua sent two spies into Jericho to get intelligence, to assess the attitude of the people within the walls. And when they returned, they brought the report that the people in Jericho were terrified. Somehow, they learned of the crossing of the Red Sea 40 years before, of the disappearance of Pharaoh and his great army, and of the great victories that the Israelite army had achieved over the kingdoms on the east side of the Jordan River, over Og, the king of Bashan, and over the kingdom of Moab. But even though they had heard all these reports, the people in Jericho would have been tempted to be confident that this massive wall would have been sufficient to stop any attack. The barley harvest was already in. The city of Jericho had a spring of water inside its walls. So they had food, they had water, so they imposed a siege upon themselves. They closed the gates, and they resolved that they could last longer than the Israelites could. Now, the preferred method of forcing the surrender of fortified cities was the siege. And in a siege, you had attacking forces surrounding the city and starving them into submission, waiting for them to surrender. But for such a tactic to work at Jericho would have required far more patience, talking about years of patience, than the children of Israel could afford to show. So it would have seemed to them, and to anyone else analyzing the situation, the obstacles were simply too great. There was no way, there was no way in which the Israelites could prevail. But the word of the Lord to Joshua was very clear. They were to lay siege to Jericho, and within just 1 week, the city's defenses would collapse, and the army of Israel would be able to destroy the city. So it was, as we read, that the army of Israel embarked on this first phase of the campaign of conquest. The campaign to claim the land that God promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, this first part of the fight would go down in the annals of warfare as thoroughly unorthodox. As thoroughly unorthodox, and yet as thoroughly triumphant. The triumph was to be the manifestation of the truth that no one is beyond the reach of God's judgment. And that included the people inside the defenses at Jericho. So in this passage, we face the reality of judgment at Jericho. Judgment at Jericho. This event has captured the imagination of generations ever since it occurred. It has been the source of songs and of sermons. Joshua fit the Battle of Jericho. Infidel archaeologists have tried to show that there was no evidence to support the biblical account, as though any biblical account needed such evidence. But archaeologists of the later 20th century did succeed in uncovering the evidence not only of the city's walls, but also of the unusual manner in which they collapsed. Jericho has become synonymous then with any task that appears to be impossible, and with any human confidence that God's promised judgment, whatever the preachers say, will not materialize. So it's a story of God's mighty power. It's a story of God's fierce judgment. It's a story of God's tender mercy. It's a story of complete faith in what God has said. Was the only thing that led them to march around the city all those times. They had faith in what God said. It's a story of simple obedience to what God has commanded. It's a story that reminds us that when sinners think they have closed off every avenue of approach to them, God is still able to reach them. It's a reminder to the people of God that in the confession of Job, at the end of the book of Job, God can do anything. And that when God directs his people to see the salvation of their God, they are going to see it. Regardless of the level of confidence the people had regarding this imposing city and their ability to conquer it, God's promise was, you're going to conquer it. So if you doubt the ability of God today for something in your own life, come to look on the ruins of what was the most imposing of all the walled cities in the land of Canaan. The walls collapsed. The buildings were destroyed. The containers of grain are still where they were on that day. And the part of the wall where Rahab and her family lived, still standing. The Lord is true to his word. We see the evidence in every succeeding generation of Rahab's family that God would bring his Redeemer into the world through Rahab's offspring. So see the evidence here that when God calls upon his people to trust in him, he will not let them down. He will not forsake them. So let's ponder this judgment of God on Jericho and consider there this mighty display of God's power. First of all, let us notice false security. False security. At the very beginning of the chapter, in the opening sentence, we read that Jericho was straitly shut up because of the children of Israel. Nobody went out and nobody came in. And unlike other sieges which imposed such a condition from the outside, here was a situation imposed from the inside. The city leaders ordered the massive gates to be closed and ladders from the walls to be drawn in and secured. Now think about the people inside. Sometimes I don't think we put ourselves in their situation. Think about the people inside the city. Remember the reports of the spies that a number of the people had heard these tidings of the Israelite armies and they were very much afraid. But inside the city, because of these high walls, the people could not see the camp of Israel just a couple miles away. They couldn't see the smoke or the dust. So the people were taught to place their confidence in the walls. No one had ever been able to breach them. And while people were concerned about the reports they had heard of these amazing victories, they felt that those circumstances were different. They had been battles that happened out in the open. This was a city that was walled up to heaven, and they were going to escape. But centuries before, the Lord gave a message to Abraham. Let us turn to Genesis chapter 15. Genesis chapter 15. Verse 13. He said unto Abram, know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. And also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and afterward shall they come out with great substance. And thou shalt go to thy fathers in peace. Thou shalt be buried in a good old age. But in the fourth generation they shall come hither again. Notice this, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. The iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. They thought, the people of Jericho, that they would escape any threatened judgment of God. But God said to Abraham centuries before, the iniquity is not yet full. The day for the unleashing of divine vengeance had not come. But centuries later, the time for the people of Jericho was expiring. The Lord gave to Joshua a battle plan that must have struck any military tactician as absolute lunacy. The men of the army were to make their formation, as they had done in all their marches through the wilderness, and they were to go along with the priests who were carrying the Ark of the Covenant. So there was to be an armed force going before the Ark, and the priests who accompanied were to carry their shofars, their trumpets made of ram's horns, and they were to blow their trumpets all during the march around the city. However long a march it was, probably a mile or two at the most. Behind the ark was to be the tribe of Dan, as had always been the case on the march through the wilderness. And they were to form the rear ward. So each day, the army got up. They got their breakfast. They got all their equipment together. They formed up for march, and they left the camp at Gilgal, and they marched to the city of Jericho, 2 or 3 miles away, and then they marched once around the outside of that massive bottom wall. And then they marched back again the 2 or 3 miles to the camp, and they settled down for the night. And aside from the blowing of the trumpets, there was to be no other sound, no talking in the ranks. Now, you can be sure that on the walls there were lookout places, there were towers. And the people who were in those towers could see all this going on and no doubt reported it to those inside. You'll never guess what those people are doing. They're just walking without saying anything around the wall, and then they march off again. What they thought of the effectiveness of this device, we don't know. But it didn't really matter what they thought about it. The truth was that their time, though they did not think so, their time was gone. And their sense of security behind those walls was leading them to judgment. And how many times is that true? People think that they have found a way to elude the reach of God. And so it doesn't matter what you say to them. It doesn't matter how you try to warn them against being presumptuous toward God. They believe they are secure. But I want to tell you, God is not at a loss when it comes to executing his will. The orders for the battle plan were very explicit, and Joshua explained them to the troops in exact detail. And so, without any delay, the very next day, they put the plan into action. Now, there have been other such unorthodox commands. If you turn to the second book of Chronicles and to chapter 20, Second Chronicles chapter 20. Not going to take the time to read this whole passage, but beginning at verse 15, you read the story of the forces of Judah under King Jehoshaphat confronting the enemy which was before them at that time, the alliance of the children of Moab and Ammon and Mount Seir. Notice in verse 15 what the Lord said. Hearken ye, all Judah, and ye inhabitants of Jerusalem. This is through a prophet, through whom the Spirit of the Lord spoke. Thus saith the Lord unto you, be not afraid nor dismayed by reason of this great multitude, for the battle is not yours but God's. Tomorrow go ye down against them. Behold, they come up by the cliff of Ziz, and ye shall find them at the end of the brook before the wilderness of Jeruel. Ye shall not need to fight in this battle. Set yourselves, stand ye still, and see the salvation of the Lord with you, O Judah and Jerusalem. Fear not, nor be dismayed. Tomorrow go out against them, for the Lord will be with you. And we notice in verse 22 that when they began to sing and to praise, the Lord set ambushments against the children of Ammon, Moab, and Mount Seir, which were come against Judah, and they were smitten. They were routed. That huge enemy force disappeared. Now listen, the great test for the people in both of these cases was whether they would believe God, whether they had confidence in their God. Would they carry out what he said, or would they, out of doubt, make an alternate plan? Now, we need a contingency. We're going to take another course. Well, in the case of the army of Israel at Jericho, they followed God's plan. Day after day for 6 days. Think about it. You get up, you march out, march around the city, then you march back. Next day you do the same thing. No one says a word. Now, don't you think by the fifth day, there would be some people wondering, I wonder if this is really going to do any good. I wonder if this is really going to work. Because the walls are still there. We got to figure out a way to get those walls down. We have to figure out a way to launch something against the wall that will break it up. Been listening to an audiobook lately about Genghis Khan and the Mongol warriors of the 13th and, well, the 12th and 13th and 14th centuries. And to listen to the description of their engines of war that they developed to use against walled fortresses really is an amazing thing to consider. Well, no doubt people were thinking, we need something like that here. The city's defenses didn't seem disturbed at all. But the seventh day was to be the day when God's power would appear. So they were to march around the city seven times. Now that's a long day when you're talking about marching from the camp to the city. Now you're marching around the city, however big the circumference was, maybe 2 miles, maybe more, who knows. But to do that seven times, after having done it every day for 6 days, now at the end of the seventh circuit of the city, they were to hear the blast of the trumpet and they were to shout. And God said, when you do that, the wall will fall down flat. Now, the evidence at the site indicates that the walls collapsed in such a way that they formed a great ramp over which the army of Israel could scramble up into the city, up to the top of the hill. The language of verse 20 suggests just such a movement in Joshua 6. The people shouted when the priest blew with the trumpets, and it came to pass when the people heard the sound of the trumpet and the people shouted with a great shout that the wall fell down flat, so that the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they took the city. Literally, they went up and over into the city. Now you can imagine the people inside who had been trusting in the wall. Suddenly, it's not there anymore. There was a rout. And here's a lesson for every sinner. God knows how to reach you. God knows where you live. And one way or another, He will get to you. But here's a word for God's people. Whatever the obstacles are, we have to confront them in confidence in God's power. And in the midst of the battle plan, there was something else to which the army of Israel had to pay attention. That's the second thing that we find: fearful warning. For beginning at verse 17, Joshua added this word: there would be no enrichment from this victory. No spoil was to be taken from the city. It was to be accursed. It was to be devoted entirely to the Lord. The New Testament equivalent to this concept is anathema. That which is anathema is that which is devoted to God for judgment. That gives force to Paul's expression to the Galatians: if anybody comes and preaches any other gospel than what I have preached to you, let him be anathema. Let him be accursed. Let him be devoted to God for judgment. So nothing was to be taken from Jericho. Now, if you study warfare in the ancient world, the taking of spoil was routine. The armies weren't paid by any government to speak of, so they got spoil. But here, nothing was to be taken from Jericho. And you know, it's an amazing thing that archaeologists studying the ruins of Jericho have found jars full of grain found in the ruins centuries afterward amid the evidence of fire. The Israelites didn't take anything out, except for one. So here was a test of faith. The people needed food. They needed provisions. Would the people trust the Lord to meet their needs? Would they be able to wait for the Lord to provide those things? Because God's word was everything. Everything was to be destroyed. So judgment fell on the residents of Jericho. These people were idolaters. For generations, they worshipped false gods. For generations, they defied the God of heaven. For generations, looking unto the heavens and knowing that there was a God who created them, they despised him. They didn't want to retain him in their thoughts. So every single one of the people in Jericho, yes, including women and children, young and old, every single one was put to the sword. Now the people of our generation consider such treatment to be harsh. There are a lot of people who embrace the heretic Marcion from the second century, who was among the first to popularize the idea that there was a different God in the Old Testament than in the New, And you no doubt have heard people talk about this very thing. The God of the Old Testament is harsh. He's unloving. The God of the New Testament is kind and merciful. Marcion's views, to say nothing of his heretical approach to the scriptures and the person of Christ, were an effort to undermine the gospel of God's salvation. But the lesson here is that God is long-suffering. The people of Jericho, for all their defiance of God, God held back his hand until the iniquity was full. And only then did he unleash his fury. But you know, in the midst of the destruction, there was a story of grace. And that is always the way we find it when we talk about the judgments of God. In the face of the judgments of God, there is always grace. And that is the third thing that we find here, fruitful favor. Because there was, by the sovereign grace of God, one of God's people and her family inside the city of Jericho. Well, that's right. Her name was Rahab. She was a harlot. She had already demonstrated that she believed in the Lord. How did she do that? She hid the spies. And she took a scarlet line, not a piece of thread, but actually a substantial rope of scarlet. She bound that scarlet line in the window of her house, which was on the city wall. She had no doubt. I tell you, she had no doubt that she would be saved. When she saw the Israelites marching around outside, when she heard about that, she had no doubt she was going to be saved. And so she was. Because the evidence that the archaeologists have uncovered has shown that one part of the wall did not collapse. That was the part where she lived. So Joshua gave instruction to the spies who knew her. He said to them, you already know her. You get her and you bring her out of the city. And they did. And we read about their action in that the latter part of chapter 6, verse 23. The young men that were spies went in and brought out Rahab and her father, and her mother, and her brethren, and all that she had, and they brought out all her kindred, and left them without the camp of Israel, before they set fire to the ruins of the city. And we find the words of verse 25 very significant. Joshua saved Rahab. Now this was an action in type. I want you to see that Joshua saved Rahab, because the greater Joshua is the Lord Jesus Christ, and he saves those who are marked for destruction when they take their shelter under the scarlet line of Christ's redemption. What was the evidence of her faith? It was her action in hiding the spies. She's mentioned in Hebrews 11 in this very context. She hid the spies. And what was the result of the great victory? That's the last thing I want you to think of. Forceful commander. Joshua said, this city is never to be rebuilt. And he said anyone who made the effort to rebuild Jericho would pay a fearful price. Notice what he said. He shall lay the foundation thereof in his firstborn, and in his youngest son shall he set up the gates of it. But you know, there are always people who think that they can evade the judgments of God. Well, that was a long time ago. By the time we come to the days of Ahab in Israel, that was a long time ago. And so a man came who rebuilt Jericho. 1 Kings chapter 16. 1 Kings chapter 16. This was the time of Ahab. You notice in verse 33, we read about Ahab. He made a grove, and Ahab did more to provoke the Lord God of Israel to anger than all the kings of Israel that were before him. That's saying a lot. In his days, in the days of Ahab, in the days when Elijah was about to burst on the scene, did Hiel, the Bethelite, build Jericho. He laid the foundation thereof in Abiram, his firstborn, and set up the gates thereof in his youngest son, Segub, according to the word of the Lord, which he spake by Joshua, the son of Nun. So here was the commander saying, no one is to rebuild this city, and if anyone does that, this is the price he will pay. And so it came to pass. We notice at the end of Joshua 6 that the fame of Joshua spread throughout all the country. The Lord was with him. This great commander, this great captain, his fame spread across the whole land. And when the defenders of the other cities heard of Joshua, this forceful commander, they were afraid because they knew he had power with them. They began looking for ways in which to negotiate with him. And so it is with our greater Joshua, our great commander. He has the power of God in his hand. And those are wise who take note of that and say, I surrender to you, the greater Joshua. This was the lesson of the judgment at Jericho. The people at Jericho, though they thought they had defended themselves so that God could never get them, found out that God's power is not limited by the walls that people build. And the army of Israel took the city. And those people who had been so confident soon were called to their accounting before God. And the city was consigned to the dustbin of history. And even though later it was rebuilt and there is a modern Jericho on near the site of the ancient city, yet the ruins of the ancient city remind us God knows how to execute judgment. But in the example of Rahab, God knows how to save his people, to rescue them from the judgment. So we rejoice today in that knowledge that we have a great commander and that he knows how to deliver his people. May God bless the word to your encouragement today and to your warning today, for his name's sake.